The K Jazz Show, Sundays on Kofifi FM 97.2.
There's something quite otherworldly about the sound of a saxophone when it's in the right hands, when it becomes more than brass, more than notes, when it becomes a vessel for stories, textures, and time. And our guest on the K-Jazz Show is one such master storyteller. From the streets of Italy to the very core of New York City's jazz pulse, Daniel Jamani has carved a sonic path that speaks to fearless innovation and tender homage. And of course, whether he's navigating the intimate harmonies of jazz or maybe even flirting with the gloss of pop influences, Daniel's sound remains sincere, searching, and soul deep. South Africa, Johannesburg, wherever you may be listening from, this is for the real jazz cats. Kofifi FM, let's welcome saxophonist, composer, and restless creator, Daniel Jamani. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Fantasia. It's an honor for me to be here live streaming with you, all of you.
A pleasure. A pleasure to be with us. Thank you so much. You know, Dan, let's go all the way back. You and I, you know, when did music first become real for you? Was there a moment or a memory that lit the fire, as it were, you know, to say, this is it. This is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, well, it's kind of crazy because it goes way, way back when I was 3 years old, that I remember like watching with my father the movie Blues Brothers. And first of all, my family, nobody in my family is a musician. My sister played piano for a short period, like for 6 years. So growing up, I would listen to her playing piano. So I my first year of life, I would hear the piano, and that definitely helped a lot. But I remember like being 3 years old and watching Blues Brothers and watching the saxophone for the first time and being like telling my father, that's what I want to do. And then I was 3 years old and watching the saxophone. I was completely like really like the saxophone like looked like a magic instrument. I was like, I want to play that instrument, you know. And then eventually I started piano lesson when I was 4 years old, and I took some piano lesson. In fact, my first instrument is piano. I play piano as well. That's how I compose, but we can talk about that a little later. But and then eventually I started piano from 4 to 10 years old, and then I was able to grasp the chance to play in the marching band of my hometown. I come from a very small town in Italy called Arce, with only 6,000 people, and it's a nice street band that they play classical music, and we would march during religious procession, and we would be playing. I would be working early age, because at 10, 11, 12, I would be playing with this band and going around town, so I was already kind of like pretty much, I can say, touring, but with all the kids and older people. This marching band, it was full of like people of different ages, from 6 years old to like 70 years old. You know, it was like crazy community of people in my hometown. And then I started. I remember it was funny because they didn't have the saxophone when I went there. They were like, oh, if you want, you can play the clarinet, I think. And I was like, no way, I want to play the saxophone. That's what it was in my mind. It was like a mission. So eventually they found a saxophone for me and I started playing the saxophone. And then I went, when I was 13 years old, I applied to the conservatory. So my studies were pretty much classical back then, because that's how I started. And at 13 years old, I did the classical conservatory in Italy. That's actually 7 years. And while I was doing high school at the same time. And when I graduated, I was 20 years old. And it was the same time when I received a scholarship to Berklee College of Music. And that brought me to United States, so 12 years ago. And that's where I began my life here in US as a musician.
And you grew up in Italy, you know, but you've been shaped by a supposedly musical, a global language, if I may put it that way, which is jazz, you know. But right. How did your roots and your upbringing influence the kind of artist that you've become today?
Well, I started listening to jazz while I was in the conservatory. In the conservatory, I was studying classical music, like fugues, like classical repertoire for saxophone, even if there isn't much, but like there are a lot of etudes, a lot of repertoire that was written. And that's what I was studying in school. And at the same time, though, I was listening to some jazz, thanks to some people in my town, some friends that were older, like people that were kind of trying to bring in to play in their bands. So I was also pretty much the only saxophonist in my town. So I would play so many different bands. Like I would play in like a pop band, a rock band, like a jazz, small jazz ensemble, like all kinds of bands, because I was very excited about music. So every possibility to play for me was important. So I would take it, you know. And I started listening to some records when I was 14, Johnny Hodges, Charlie Parker. I remember listening to those people. I didn't have much growing up. I didn't have a lot of people like showing me records, but like what I was able to grasp was those guys, like Herbie Hancock, of course, Thelonious Monk. And that kind of like put me in such a curiosity about jazz and composition in general, you know. And I was very interested until when I went like 15. I went in some jazz camps in Italy, and then started to listening more jazz and meeting people, meeting amazing musicians with music. That's pretty much the most beautiful things about music, is really bringing together all these people. So when I was 19, I won a scholarship for Berklee College of Music. I applied being in Rome, and then I won the scholarship, full scholarship that brought me to US. And that's where I met all my teacher and musician that I really love, like George Garzone, Joe Lovano, Jerry Bergonzi, and so many, John Patitucci, so many of them that kind of shaped the musician that I am. And I have a long list. We'll go through that if you want in a little bit, but there are a lot of lists of big names that were important for me.
Yeah, yeah. And you've managed, by the way, you know, to weave through genres. There are hints of pop sensibility, I suppose, in your phrasing and structure. And at the same time, you've remained so deeply rooted in jazz depth, if we're going to call it that. How do you balance the two musical languages in your playing and maybe in composition too?
Well, so the influence, I try to grasp influence from a lot of genre. I wouldn't say especially on pop, but I try to merge a lot of influences with music that I write, because I've read a lot of music and I can talk about it too. But it's definitely like what I try to master and practice and learn is the repertoire of songs like Cole Porter, George Gershwin, like all those composers that wrote. So right now, what my practice is pretty much learning those tunes, learning like repertoire of I wouldn't call it standards, but yeah, American songbook. And that kind of shapes the knowledge of the repertoire. That for me, I think repertoire is the most important thing if you want to be a jazz musician. So that's what I practice. And but with the open to listening all kind of genre, definitely that kind of like comes into my composition. You know, I definitely listen a lot of Brazilian music as well. Definitely pop. I do produce myself. In fact, you asked me before what was Secret Agent. That's my secret name, artist name that I release music. You can find it on Spotify and all platforms, but I don't really promote much that secret name. It's more like a hobby where I try to produce, like, yeah, art, even pop. Like, I have tape machine here in my studio, scenes I produce, and for me that's a very good way of kind of releasing and composing. I love composing. And so I try to compose in all the different ways possible, like with the piano or like with the machines, like synths, synthesizer, drum machine, tape machine. And so for me, creation is the most important thing. And I was doing this challenge that really shaped me. I think it was 2019, yeah. Before COVID, before all of that, I said to myself, I'm gonna write a song per day. And by song, I mean like a composition with the melody and chords. I'm gonna write a song per day for a year. And I was able to do this, and I did it for actually a year, 1 year and a half. So I wrote like 630 composition.
My word.
And in this 600 composition, then I tried to pick the best, and I'm still trying to find, because I don't remember any of them, because there are so many. So I always go back in my book and try to pick the one that I like the most to play in the jazz clubs here
in
New York.
Kofifi FM for page 3. This Sunday, we are in the company of New York-based saxophonist Danielle Jamani, who joins us today for this edition of page 3, our feature, you know, on the K-Jazz Show. And during our conversation, you and I will be listening to some of the music from his previous releases, including some brand new material from his latest project, Hymn to Departure, a 15-track project showcasing his incredible skill as a musician. And speaking of New York City, Dan, we often hear that the city is no joke, specifically or especially for musicians who are, you know, in the jazz field. It's demanding, it's alive, it's overcrowded with talent. But how do you navigate this hustle and stay true, you know, to the voice that is in an ocean of sound and influences?
Well, great question. Well, New York is definitely like one of the best places for jazz, for music. It's full of like incredible musicians. They all live here, so they're happy to play, to share knowledge with you when you are really young, and then they open your door for like session play. And it's definitely a difficult city. It's not for everybody, and it's very, there are many days where like it's difficult to just make it through, but it's with a lot of dedication. I'm sure everybody can find their space. There are a lot of gigs, and the gigs, even the gigs, the concert, the music don't exist. Musicians are the one that can create their own concert and create their own scene. So I think that's very important to know, if for people moving here, that they can't be waiting for something to happen. They just have to move around to try to make it happen, to create their own scene. That's what I then. Luckily now I live and only playing concerts. So every day I have a different gig that I have scheduled. I have my my gig that I play weekly. And then when I have something more bigger, like a tour or like a concert in jazz festival or like jazz clubs, then I sub those weekly gigs that I have. But like I have something that is steady, and that's very important. It took me 8 years. And at first I was even doing, the first year I was doing other jobs as well. Like once I moved from Berkeley after I graduated, my first year in New York, I was struggling. I was cooking, I was delivering, I was like painting walls. I was like doing all kinds of jobs for 1 year, till I was able to just make it with teaching and playing gigs. And now I don't really teach anymore. I do only in some occasion when like I have some particular student that want to really study something that it's very interesting. But before I used to teach all ages, now I only play gigs. So and things luckily gets better. But I remember going around the city asking to every club, every restaurant, every venue if they want live music. I would literally go in person, like just knocking doors, and I would do that in the months that really were like, I don't know, remember January, February, those months usually very, very slow. And me and my friend would go like door to door from Harlem to downtown Manhattan, like just knocking to every club and be like, all right, you guys need duo here, you need trio. And then luckily I got some response. I got some weekly gigs. And those weekly gigs are very important for musicians because they can really practice during those gigs and also getting paid. But like they can really spend time to really do miles on the saxophone, where they really can just spend time on the saxophone or every instrument and really spending time on the instrument. And that's how really kind of like the sound, you know, comes out many hours.
Uh-huh.
You know, collaboration is everything in jazz, you know, and the magic of the moment, Dan, often comes when, you know, from who is in the room, I guess, you know. So let's talk about the musicians that you worked with, you know, across your work, across your albums, and what they each brought to the table and how they shaped your final vision, which is, you know, the albums, the sound.
Absolutely, yeah. So my last record, I have... I think 7 record out on my name, and every project with different musician. They're all my closest friend and collaborator. I love them. I love making music, and each person individually was chosen for what they would bring, as you mentioned, and not only musical, but actually also like as a person. You know, like it's very important. They make you feel good, and then that really resonates in the music. And my last record featured Leo Genovese, which amazing pianist, Grammy winner. He won a Grammy recently with Wayne Shorter on the record. They recorded live at Detroit Jazz Festival. You can find it on Shorter page actually. And Leo has been my friend for the last 8 years. He's important key for my New York life. He's one of the most positive person that I know, and he really brings all the musician together, like all my friends together, like when he's in town. He's working so much, so he's never really in town right now, but he's like one of the best. He's also one of the reason why I started writing a tune per day, because I went to his house once, like 6 years ago. I remember going to his house, and then he had all these books, so many books with his own composition, and every song that we played was just incredible. And so I was like, wow, I mean, so it means that like actually quantity is really important to achieve quality. So that became my mantra, is like quantity is gonna take me to quality. Actually, that's what I fully believe in for composition. And that's what really completely changed my approach in composing. And also Francesco Marcocci is on bass. He's one of my dearest friends as well. We played a lot of gigs together weekly. And then Jeff Williams on drums. He's like amazing. He played with Stan Getz Quartet back in the days. He's a little older than me. Like I think he's around 70 years old, and he's like a legend. Mm-hmm. I also met him with Leo Genovese. But in my other records, I had my best friend, like Justin Salisbury, amazing pianist, Giuseppe Cucchiara, John Cook Kim on drums, which is also the drummer of Aaron Park right now. We went to Berkeley together, and he's becoming such a legend right now among all the jazz musicians. And we went to Berkeley together, and recently played with my band. There are some videos up on YouTube. If you type Daniele Germani Quartet with David Kikoski on piano, another amazing legend of the piano, David Kikoski, he brought something incredible to the bandstand. It was the first time for him reading my music. I brought all new original music, 10 songs on a live in this jazz club in the city, and then he read all this music incredibly and just entered the music like I couldn't believe it. I mean, he's a legend.
Yeah.
And so many more names, like I've been playing with this guitar player that's a legend, Emanuele Basentini, incredible guitar player. He's my mentor. I'm learning so much from him. Thanks to him, I learned like a list of so many different songs that like not many people knows, but he knows them all. It's kind of crazy. He knows like thousands of songs. So
yeah,
try to learn with him. Other collaboration, a tour with George Garzone, Joe Lovano, Dave Douglas. I play with Dave Douglas, Kenny Werner.
Really great names there, you know, really great, incredible, you know, your account of these incredible artists would spend the rest of the day, you know, just reflecting, you know, on some of the really great names and some of the great influences, I suppose, some of them have been to you, you know, the work that you've done, you know, incredible, you know, and I suppose when we talk about, you know, writing and composing, Dan, especially in a city as noisy as New York City and intense as New York City, where do you go for silence? You know, for stillness, for clarity. Is there a specific ritual or a practice that grounds you creatively?
Honestly, not really. I think that, yeah, silence is very important for me. Luckily, in my room, I can be very, it's not that noisy. I'm in Brooklyn. I'm on a busy street. I can see it from here. It's a busy street. But luckily, it's kind of like quiet. And for me, I think like my only ritual for me to write and compose, it's just literally to sit on the piano. In the years I've tried to avoid many other things around to minimize the process, which is the composition part is just sitting on the piano and writing. There is nothing else around because everything else can be either an excuse or like makes you waste time. For me, it's just literally part of sitting down and then writing the song and deciding, okay, right now I'm writing. So. And I definitely developed this thanks to writing a tune per day when I was forcing myself, okay, every day I have to write a song, no matter what, I have to finish a song. I never skipped that day for a year and a half. Even if I had only 1 minute to write a song, I would write it in 1 minute. But the goal was like to just write it. And that was a practice, not only in writing, but it's a practice for consistent and like just kind of be dedicated to one thing, and once I said yes to something, being like, okay, that's what I'm going for. Nothing's gonna change, you know, what was my initial idea, you know? So
yeah.
I think that something that I want people to know that if they want to write, especially for listeners that are young and they want to write and they want to get into composition, my only suggestion is just write because there is nothing else that you can be doing. The only suggestion is like, right, sit down and then buy a book that you can, like a book like where you can write music and then find nice name for songs or like just put a number so you have like kind of like something that worked for me. So I was everything very precise and then just come up with a melody, even if it's only one measure, two measure, 50 measure, like just write something that when you go back, you're like, oh, actually you wrote that. And then the next day you write more, and next day you write more, and then eventually you become a composer, you know.
Thank you. Absolutely. Sure. And that's great advice for those jazz musicians that are listening to the show right here on Covifia FM 97.2. Of course, this is the K Jazz Show. And this Sunday, we are in the company of Italian New Yorker Daniel Khemani, or Jamani. And he joins us this Sunday as our featured guest. And we are talking about his latest project, Hymn to Departure, including some of his compositions from his previous projects and offerings. And we have been listening throughout this conversation, you know, to that music. And of course, we are glad you can join us, you know, on today's edition of Page 3, happening between 12 and 1 o'clock every single Sunday as you get ready for your lunchtime. It's absolutely a pleasure to have you with us. Dan, you are a storyteller, you know, through your horn, the saxophone. What stories do you feel mostly drawn to telling, you know, these days? And how have those stories supposedly changed over the course of your career?
Well, that's a very interesting question. For me, I think like story should be more for the listener. I think the listener should kind of grasp a story from my playing rather than me having a story and imposing a story. That's what I think I prefer. For me, the playing for me is a combination of unconscious and conscious mind trying to navigate through definitely emotion, because the playing changes a lot when you feel different emotion. Like I've noticed, like I play gigs every day, so I've noticed my playing being very different if I felt anger, if I felt like sadness, if I felt happiness. And I can tell that like the playing changed so much, but I'm sure the audience would probably feel something completely different from my emotion because I didn't know what was going on. So probably they would feel completely something different. And I'm happy with that. I'm happy that like the people, the listener from my composition, they end up feeling something that's gonna move them or not, but like they're gonna definitely maybe ponder it on something that's gonna change their life, or just kind of have a little laugh, or like be happy, or be a little sad with the music, the harmony that is gonna influence them, because each person is different and every person is influenced to harmony in a different way depending on their emotion in the past and what they went through and how they experienced music. So I think that's the freedom that I want to give to my music and my composition and my playing as well. So,
and I think, you know, as the world shifts, my other thing was as the world shifts and the jazz audience evolves, especially now with younger listeners tuning in from all over the world, you know, how do you see your role as a modern jazz artist, and what responsibility, maybe if any, you know, do you carry when you step onto a stage or into the studio?
It's true. It's like we're here like in such an intense period, like happening so many things. So what was our question is our role as musician is, I think, is to like create more arts possible, composition arts and painting, music, that will actually resonate with young people, and that will make them rebel, or like make them act, or not even rebel, just make them like fall in love and then create emotion and new experience with people, and then create peace. Because I think that what artists can really feel that a lot, and I think that's the most important thing ever, really having peace. Definitely, and hopefully we can do that with music, but it's very difficult for us. What we can do is, we cannot really do much. We can do is I really compose and play. Hopefully we'll help people to be more emotion, create more emotion in people, and you know, and be more positive in general. So I noticed that like we definitely have like in New York, we definitely have a lot of more young people coming to my show, and that makes me very happy. It's fantastic, like to see a lot of like young people coming to. I play in this jazz club in Brooklyn. I want to also mention, because it's one of the greatest club right now, and it's called Ornithology Jazz Club. And it's in Bushwick and opened 2 years ago, and it's very, very amazing place, and bringing a lot of young musicians, young people. And I luckily have a residency there. Like I play every first Wednesday of the month. So if any listener is here, is going to travel to New York, I play every first Wednesday of the month at 6:30 at Ornithology Jazz Club. And I rotate different bands and I play my original music, and I'm noticing like a lot of young people coming, and that's probably one of the best experience for me, is to actually play this venue and see all these young people that come to me after the gig and ask me about the composition, ask me like what's going on in the writing, ask me the music, where I can find the music. So that's kind of nice.
You know, and it's great, because then jazz is indeed evolving, and the younger audiences are paying attention, which is exactly what we want. We want longevity, and this is exactly how it's done, you know, with the younger people, you know, coming in. And of course, finally, you know, Dan, if you could bring, you know, your music to Johannesburg one day, someday, to our jazz family here, you know, what would that moment mean to you? And what would you want to say, you know, through your horn to the people who'll be hearing you for the very first time on the K-Jazz Show this Sunday?
Well, I would definitely be so honored to come there and play a live show. I mean, that's why I'm creating. I think thanks to music, in the years, I've luckily met so many amazing people. And that's really thanks to music, and the positivity through music really brought me so much connection, amazing connection with amazing people, and that's what I would want coming there as well, and that will open up two doors of meeting amazing people that are interested in arts and music and are really sensible, and that would be it for me. Just really experience that, and then the people experience the music that I put so much effort in writing, and that connection, that exchange would mean the world to me, and that what I would want to do in every different country and parts of the world, and hopefully I can do that more in the future.
And of course, I'm hoping that those that need to hear us putting it out there are listening and they can make it happen. And you'll find yourself at one of the Johannesburg bandstands one of these days. You know, of course, we look out to seeing you, and we look forward, you know, to experiencing the Danielle Germani experience live in Johannesburg. That would be in the lights. Absolutely. And of course, thank you so much for joining us this Sunday. And we look forward to, of course, listening closer to the music and sharing this music with the rest of, you know, South African listeners and audiences, and of course with today's edition here on the K-Jazz Show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
He is composer, saxophonist, band leader, Danielle Germani, and he's talking to us from Brooklyn, New York City this Sunday. And as always, he was on the K-Jazz Show.